when we hear Bhagavatam. I remember that one time His Holiness Bhaktacharya Swami Maharaj, he gave a class in Mayapur. And in the class he said that in ISKCON there are two mantras, very famous. One mantra to sleep, one mantra to wake up. He said the mantra to sleep is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And the mantra to wake up is Mahaprasade Govinde. So now you already get prasadam. And now you are going to hear the mantra to sleep. So this is a deadly combination. Anyway, we'll try to make the best out of the bad bargain as much as we can take it. So today we'll try to address the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, that's what we'll try to address. We may not be able to cover all the 10 topics because we have to also finish. I'm planning to finish by 5 so that we can have some time for question and answers. I mean, I'm supposed to finish by 5, so I'm planning to finish by 4:30 so that we can have some question and answers. So 4:45. Oh, okay, 4:45, so then we'll see how much we can. Leave some time for question and answers and then we'll see. Whatever we are able to cover is good. So, let's pray. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nigamakalpataror galitam phalam sukamukat amruta dravasamyutam pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvibhavukah Narayanam namaskritya Naranchaiva narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudiraye Ashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatyuttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Okay, so we can chant together. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vande Aham Sri Gurun Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sagitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Krupa Sindhubhyaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Itinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschaitya Deshatarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Mamashtanakisha Krishna Vutrishinti Pagasami Tamilina Macharapadam Takapadani Gorakaram Dharagram Tarine Mukam Kroti Vachalam Pangamangai Tigrimit Kapata Mahamande Sigurum Dinatarinam Paramananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanya Mishram Kathanjana Smriti Svindushkaram Sukaram Bhave Trismriti Pritam Syat Sri Chaitanyam Namamitam. So there are many ways to read Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is compared to the ripened fruit of Vedic literature in Bhagavatam itself. Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Phalam. So there are many ways to relish a fruit. Like someone wants to relish a mango, there are many ways of doing it. That you can take the whole mango and you can start biting and you can start eating it. Or you can nicely cut the mango and cut it into further slices and then eat slice by slice. Or some people cut the mango and then they internally slice the mango and then open it up. Then it comes like a flower and then you can start eating it. Or some people just squeeze the mango. They keep on squeezing the mango till it becomes pulpy inside. And then you make a small hole, take it out, and then you just suck the mango. So there's the one way of eating mango. So there are different ways of eating a mango. So same way, there's also different ways of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam also has many threads which is going in it. So there is thread of the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, that Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining a certain philosophy. And there's a thread of culture of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam expounds a certain culture, that we see people and they are living, they have a certain lifestyle. Like we were teaching Dhruva section, we are discussing Dhruva section. So in that there is a whole description of the kingdom of Uttanapad, that how there were streets, there were buildings, and how there were different arrangements made for welcoming Dhruva in very auspicious way. So then there is this culture of Srimad Bhagavatam, that the people who live in Srimad Bhagavatam and they have a certain culture. So you see that culture, how they live. Then there is etiquette in Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam is full of Vaishnavas and these Vaishnavas are dealing with each other. So then there is this Vaishnava etiquette which is there, which you can actually study from Srimad Bhagavatam. By studying Srimad Bhagavatam, you can actually study Vaishnava etiquette. So that is one thread which is parallelly running in Srimad Bhagavatam. Then there is purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. What is that purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam? The purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is multifold. The one purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is actually to establish pure devotional service as the topmost. So that is one purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam which is constantly happening. There's other purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam, that within the nine practices of pure devotional service, we establish chanting of the holy name is the relevant process for Kali Yuga. There's another purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam, to establish the glories of chanting the holy name. And then there's one more purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam, which the original compiler of Srimad Bhagavatam has given, that is to give commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So that's another thread which is running parallelly in Srimad Bhagavatam, that those who know Vedanta Sutra, they can actually relish Bhagavatam as a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Every topic of Vedanta Sutra has a corresponding topic and pastime in Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Vedanta Sutra is explained, everything in Sutra form. So whatever is explained in Sutra form is explained in Bhagavatam as pastimes. So there is one more purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam, that it comments on Vedanta Sutra through its different pastimes. Okay. There's one more purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is actually to defeat the five philosophies like Mimamsa, Yoga, Nyaya, Vaisheshika. So these philosophies, they have to be properly and soundly defeated, so that the conclusions of these philosophies don't confuse people. So there's one more purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. So all these things are parallelly happening in Srimad Bhagavatam. So one who knows the different purposes of Srimad Bhagavatam, they can actually see through these pastimes and the narrations of Srimad Bhagavatam all these things which are parallelly happening. So that's why Bhagavatam is like a ocean, that when we enter Bhagavatam, there are many, many things and many aspects, many facets of Srimad Bhagavatam which we can actually understand, we can see, we can relish. And one of the ways of reading Srimad Bhagavatam is to actually look through Srimad Bhagavatam through its subject matter. That's also one of the ways of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam contains that subject matter. Any Mahapurana, according to its definition, has to contain 10 subject matter. If it has to be a Mahapurana, it has to have 10 subject matter. Any Upapurana, it contains 5 subject matter. So the other 5 subject matters are mixed within the subject matters which are explicitly told in the Upapuranas. So Bhagavatam also has the 10 subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is explained in the beginning. And the 10 subjects are common for any Mahapurana, they are common. It is not unique to Srimad Bhagavatam. But what is unique to Srimad Bhagavatam is the way the subject matters are dealt with. Every Mahapurana deals with the same subject. Okay? They don't deal with some different 10 topics. If a Mahapurana means it has to deal with the same 10 topic. Okay? Bhagavatam is Mahapurana. There are 18 Mahapuranas, there are 18 Upapuranas. Okay. So list is there. If you Google, you can get it. Google Acharya can answer you. Okay. What are Mahapurana? Google. Okay. Okay. So the point is that so these 10 topics are there in Srimad Bhagavatam. This is explained in the 10th chapter, 2nd canto, 1st shloka. Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanam utayaha manvantare ishanakata nirodho muktir ashreyaha. So these are the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sarga means the creation by the Supreme Lord. Visarga means creation by Brahma. Sthanam means the different positions the living entity can take within this material world. Poshanam means protection or maintenance of the living entities and this material world. It's called Poshanam. And Uti means the impetus to perform any activity within this material world. It's called Uti. Manvantara means the genealogical table of Manus and their purposes. It is called Manvantara. Nirodha means destruction. Mukti means liberation. Ashraya means shelter. These are the simple meanings of the 10 topics. And this is explained again in Bhagavatam. Prabhupada explains this in the same 2nd canto, 10th chapter. And in 7 shlokas, starting from the 2nd shloka of 10th chapter of 2nd canto, in 7 shlokas, these topics are elaborately discussed. Each topic is discussed in elaboration. Okay. So anybody who is interested to know these topics elaborately, they can refer to this, to the 7 shlokas. So today, what we'll do is that we'll try to, because what Prabhupada has done is that he has named each canto with a title, a corresponding title from the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. For example, the first canto is titled as creation. The second canto is titled as cosmic manifestation. The third canto is titled as status quo. Fourth canto is titled as creation of the fourth order. Okay, and the fifth canto is titled as creative impetus. The sixth canto is titled as prescribed duties for mankind. 7th canto is titled as Signs of Godhead. 8th canto is titled as the Withdrawal of Cosmic Manifestation. 9th canto is titled as Liberation. So like this, each canto is titled. So Then if you actually see the subject matter of Bhagavatam, if you take the title and if you take the subject matter of those cantos, then you get one more interesting thread to actually study Srimad Bhagavatam. That what is the title and what is the content and how the title relates with the content. Because if you give a title to a book, Adventures of Tintin, okay, then you cannot explain about Chandragupta Maurya. Is it possible? You give title Adventures of Tintin and then you will explain about Chandragupta Maurya. Is it possible? It's not possible. So there should be some link between the title and the content. Okay. So if you try to understand the content of Srimad Bhagavatam through the lens of the titles which is given to the different cantos, then you end up with another interesting way of studying Srimad Bhagavatam. And suddenly all the different pastimes, they start making sense and connection. Because sometimes it's very difficult to make out sense and connection between these pastimes. Because sometimes they are in chronological order, sometimes they are not in chronological order. Sometimes it's just a question which triggers the explanation of an entire pastime. Okay. So it may not be necessarily in the order of chronology. There's a question and that question simply it triggers a pastime. Or there's a discussion and the discussion simply triggers a pastime. So like that. But they also have some reason why these pastimes are there in a certain way. So if we look at the content, that the title of each canto, then you can start making some sense out of the content, why this content is there. Then you can start looking at the content through one fresh angle, that okay, now this is how we understand. So that's what we'll try to do. We'll try to understand the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam and the content which is given in each canto and how they can relate to these topics. Like the first topic of Bhagavatam is creation. So in the first canto, creation is explained. Creation is explained in the sense of the creation of the Lord, and also creation is explained in the sense of there being a creator and the creator having a specific purpose for creation. Because the different philosophies like Mimamsa philosophy or Vaisheshika philosophy or any other philosophy, Nyaya philosophy or different philosophies, they do not put a creator who has actually created this entire creation for a specific purpose. They all tend to think that either creation eternally exists or it is simply created by a chain of events. There is no intelligent design behind creation. So it's not that the scientists alone, the modern scientists alone are thinking like this, that there is no intelligent design behind creation. There are also Vedic philosophies who think that there is no intelligent design behind creation. Of course, Vedic philosophies explain creation in a very sophisticated way, but they also consider that, some of the philosophies consider that there is no intelligent design behind creation, just a random event. Yeah. Which is put forth by a combination of certain circumstances. Different philosophies explain like this. Yeah. Yeah, because creation is the common topic. Okay, creator is not the common topic. Because there are other people who don't accept that there is the existence of a creator. The topic is common. Like in any Mahapurana, you have to deal with creation. You have to deal with Sarga. So Sarga is a common topic. Okay? But Sarga is by a creator, that is a unique topic. You understand? So that's why it's not creator, it is creation. Okay. Everyone is trying to figure out creation. From time immemorial, people are trying to figure out creation. Okay, this is not some, is not the quest of modern scientists alone. From time immemorial, everybody is trying to figure out creation. Because if you figure out creation, there are two advantages to it. One is that you can know why you exist. And the second is that if you figure out creation, you can control it. Anything you figure out, you can control. Anything you cannot figure out, you cannot control. As simple as that. If you figure out something, if you figure out how an algorithm is given, then you can control. You can make some changes. You can make it work the way you want, or you can put a virus and destroy it. You can do whatever you want if you are able to figure out. So there are two types of people who study creation. One type of person studies creation to understand the purpose of it so that he can make it meaningful. The other type of person studies creation because he can figure out what it is and then he can control it. Okay? So, the first canto of Bhagavatam, it deals with both the things. Okay? Because the creation, it has two realities. It has a Krishna conscious reality, and then it has an illusory reality. Creation, this material creation, it has two realities. One reality is a Krishna conscious reality, and the other reality is an illusory reality. This shloka? Vedyam vastavam matravastu sivadam tapatrayon mulanam. To distinguish the reality from illusion. So there is a temporary reality or an illusory reality, and then there is a permanent reality which is Krishna conscious reality. So this is the purpose of creation. So creation is set forth by Krishna so that the jivas who are in this temporary reality or illusory reality, which looks like real, that is which shloka? Teja vari mritam yata vinimayo yatra trisargo amrusha. What is the meaning of the word amrusha? What is Prabhupada translate amrusha as? You have Veda base. See the translation of the word amrusha. Almost factual, you see? Almost factual. Almost factual means what? Means what? It is not fact. But it is almost fact. So what is, why it is almost factual? It is almost factual because it is true but temporary. If anything has to be factual, it cannot be temporary. It has to be permanent. That's why it is almost factual. It is true, but the nature of this truth is temporary. Bhuta grama sevayam bhutva bhutva priliyate Ratriagame avasaparta prabhavanti aharagame. that this creation is created and annihilated again and again. The day of Brahma, it is created. The night of Brahma, it is annihilated. Like this. So it's called almost factual. So the purpose of creation is to distinguish reality from illusion. To give that chance to the jiva to actually distinguish reality from illusion. And if one is able to distinguish that reality from illusion, then what is the result? What is the result of distinguishing reality from illusion? It becomes auspicious. And what is that auspiciousness? Tapatrayonmulanam. That the threefold material miseries are completely uprooted. But who can do this? Who can distinguish this reality from illusion? Nirmatsaranam satam. Nirmatsaranam means those who do not have envy, and satam means they are devotees. So non-envious devotees are actually capable of distinguishing this reality from illusion. And by doing such distinguishing, by distinguishing this reality from illusion, they were able to throw out the inauspiciousness in their life, and their life became auspicious. Okay. And you find all those devotees in first canto. So first canto actually gives us a glimpse into the experience of those non-envious personalities who are great devotees who have actually distinguished reality from illusion and who have actually thrown out the threefold material miseries. So this is the glimpse we get in first canto. We get all these different personalities from beginning, Narada, who advises Vyasa. So first canto also has a series of personalities who are in illusion. Okay? And then it has a series of personalities who are non-envious and who have actually distinguished the reality from illusion. And the interaction between both, by which the person who is in illusion, he can get the clarity. So the first canto, it actually sets the process of intelligent inquiry. Yeah. So the first canto, while defining creation, it defines the sambandha, it defines abhideya, and it also defines prayojana. So, first canto gives a complete bird's eye view of creation in terms of sambandha, abhideya and prayojana by a series of pastimes where we can actually see the lives of different personalities who have distinguished reality from illusion. Okay. So, if you look at first canto from this perspective, then you can see that all the pastimes actually make sense. Sambandha is given in the beginning itself. Janmadyasyetaha, that is this person. Everything is related to him. Okay, that Krishna, everything is related to Krishna. Okay. Abhideya has given us the process of inquiry from the spiritual master and taking up devotional service. And Prayojana is given as love of Godhead. All the three are given in first canto. All the three are given in first canto. So now if you see pastime after pastime, it will start making sense. Okay? You see, the first pastime is the conversation between Narada and Vyasa. Okay? So the essence of the pastime is the confusion or dissatisfaction of Vyasadeva and the instructions of Narada to remove that dissatisfaction. Okay? Dissatisfaction is a symptom of illusion. One who is in illusion gets dissatisfied. Nobody else. Okay. Vyasadev, who is dissatisfied and who is thinking that what I should do better than what I have already done to remove this dissatisfaction. And then Narada comes and then he says, broadcast the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly through compiling Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the whole conversation, the reality is distinguished from illusion. Narada Muni actually hammers Vyasadeva for simply expanding the illusion of the jiva through the different explanations of Karmakanda and Jnanakanda. He actually tells him shloka after shloka that this is not what you are supposed to do. You are supposed to clearly tell that the purpose of human intelligence is to surrender to Krishna and to engage in devotional service. Okay. By such explanation, Narada actually clearly explains what is reality and what is illusion. And in the process, Narada actually explains his own life. Okay. In his previous lifetime. Where this process is clearly coming out, that by distinguishing the illusion and the reality, one can be completely free from the threefold material miseries. And the process for that is submissive inquiry from the devotees. So he meets the Bhaktivedantas, and then by meeting the Bhaktivedantas, he actually has a conversation with them. They instruct him in devotional service, and when they leave, when his mother dies, then he becomes happy. He is thinking that the only bondage of illusion which was with me, that also the Lord has cut off. Okay? And then he is happily moving. He is saying, okay, now let me go around in this world and let me actually preach Krishna consciousness, let me practice devotional service. He is just going in search of the Supreme Lord. And then he also has the vision of the Supreme Lord. So, by association of devotees, he was able to distinguish the reality from illusion. And then he gives the same knowledge to Vyasadeva. And then he tells him, so simply broadcast the glories of the Lord. And Vyasadeva in his vision is able to see the reality distinguished from illusion, because he is so powerful, he can actually visualize this. He can actually see that the Lord is the Lord is there with his internal energy, and the external energy is standing behind. He is able to see it physically. He is able to see it in his vision, and then he describes the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, and before that, before Vyasanarada Samvad, there is the conversation between Suta Goswami and the sages of Naimisharanya. Again the same thing. The sages of Naimisharanya are not very clear that what is their actual duty, what is their purpose, what they are supposed to do for the benefit of humanity. So they want to do something for the benefit of humanity, but they are not very clear what they can do for the benefit of humanity. Whatever they know they are doing, they are engaged in the yajna for long time, and that's what they know. But what they are doing, it neither gives them satisfaction, is not giving them any benefit. So then they are looking for some knowledge that what we are supposed to do. Bhurini bhuri karmani shrotavyani vibhagashah atasado atrayat saram samudhritya manishaya bhuri bhadraya bhutanam yenatma suprasidati. Bhuri Bhadraya Bhutanam, they are asking. Bhadraya Bhutanam means what is auspicious to every living entity. They are not asking what is auspicious to human being. What is auspicious to every living entity? Bhuri Bhadraya Bhutanam, Yenatma Suprasidati, by which the soul can be completely satisfied. Suprasidati is the word. Means that complete satisfaction of the soul can be attained. And what does Sruta Goswami reply to that? Savaipumsam parodharmo yato bhakti radokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. That he identifies pure devotional service ahaituki apratihata bhakti as parodharma. Okay. And then of course he also explains artha, kama, moksha, everything, okay, in terms of pure devotional service. So this is the common thread which is running in first canto. Great personalities who have actually distinguished the reality from illusion. Then after Vyasanara Samvad, you get to see who? Aswatthama. Okay? And that fellow is thinking that I can do whatever I want. I can frustrate the plan of the Lord. But then his plan gets frustrated. We see the entire frustration of Aswatthama's plan. And then we meet Bhishma Dev. In the process of the pastime, we meet Bhishma Dev. So Bhishma Dev explains the entire process of devotional service. Before he leaves the body, he is explaining the entire process of devotional service. So in the prayers of Bhishma Dev is very nicely explained that how the Lord is so merciful to his devotee. Sadeva Devo Bhagavan Pratikshatam Kalevaram Yavadidam Hinomyaham Prasanna Hasaruna Lochanullasan Mukambudo Dhyana Patas Chatus Budehi, he is saying. Yeah. So in material terms, if you see, Bhishma is always on the opposite party to Krishna. He is never with Krishna. Krishna is with Pandavas, Bhishma is with Kauravas. And even in the final fight, Bhishma is actually fighting with Pandavas, and especially he is fighting with Arjuna. Okay? And in the process, he is also fighting with Krishna. Krishna makes a promise, then Bhishma is telling that I will make Krishna to break his promise. So if you see, it looks like Bhishma, and from material point of view, it looks like that Bhishma is always competing with Krishna. Krishna is saying something, Bhishma is saying something. Krishna is going with Pandavas, Bhishma is going with Kauravas. And Bhishma is also hurting Krishna. He is putting arrows to hurt Krishna. So many things are happening between Bhishma and Krishna. But when Bhishma has to leave his body, then what happens? Krishna, he personally comes and stands in front of Bhishma. He is waiting for Bhishma, he is waiting on Bhishma. Bhishma is saying, the Lord is waiting upon me as I am going to leave my body. The Lord is waiting upon me, he says. As I am going to leave my body. So that actually I can see his face. Prasanna hasa aruna lochana ullasan, he says. Very beautifully explains the beauty of the Lord's eyes and the face. And he is also thinking at that time the pastime of fighting with the Lord. Tribhuvana Kamanam Tamalavarnam Ravikara Gauravarambaram Tadane Paburalaka Kulavudana Abjan Vijayasake Ratirastume Anavadya, he says. The Lord is before him, the fight is over, everything is done, but he is remembering that form of the Lord, Vijayasake Ratirastume Anavadya, he is saying that person who is friend of Arjuna. He is standing, he is there on the Rath, and his body, which is so beautiful, is covered by the dust of the battlefield. And all the decorations on his face is also covered by the dust. And he is managing that chariot, and let that person be visible to my eyes. So very beautifully he is explaining his relationship with the Lord. And that's the first time we actually understand what it means to exchange the mellows with Krishna. rasa, the exchange of rasa is understood, is introduced to the reader, that what it means to exchange rasa with the Lord. So in Virya Rasa, Bhishma is actually relating to Krishna. Bhishma is a fighter and Krishna is also a fighter, and both of them, they relate to each other in that rasa of Virya Rasa. So he is actually saying that here is Krishna, the way I adore him as the fighter in the battlefield. And at the same time, Bhishma is glorifying the gopis in his prayer. He adores him as the fighter in the battlefield, but he is saying that the real love or the real exchange of rasa between the Lord and the devotees is properly understood by studying the relationship of the gopis and the Supreme Lord. So Bhishma is explaining in his prayers, he is singing the glories of the gopis. So then we see that Bhishma's condition is such a horrible condition materially, that he is pierced all over his body by arrows. He is just lying on the battlefield. He doesn't even have any shelter. He is just lying in the open. Horrible condition. There cannot be a condition materially more horrible than Bhishma's condition at his time of death. If at all, if one is thinking about the pain of material body or the status of material body in which the material body is so damaged, there cannot be a more damaged material body than Bhishma's body, because it is explained in Mahabharata, there was no space for one more arrow to enter in his body. There was no space for one more arrow to enter. So now this is his condition. And in this condition, what he is doing? He is relishing the exchange of love between him and Krishna. And when you see this, you understand what Tapatraya Unmulanam means. So how Tapatraya Unmulanam works, you can actually understand when you see this exchange of love between Bhishma and Krishna, in Bhishma being his condition. So the condition of the material body becomes completely immaterial in his exchange of love with Krishna. Nothing stops him. Savaipumsam parodharmo hito bhaktir adokshaje ahaituki apratihata. So when it is said ahaituki apratihata, then you see Bhishma Dev, you can understand what ahaituki apratihata means. He is not complaining to Krishna that why did you get all my body pierced with arrows. Nor is the arrows piercing his body stopping him from executing his devotional service. Because he is non-envious of Krishna. Nirmat Saranam Satam. He is non-envious of Krishna. The moment he sees Krishna, immediately he identifies Krishna. He is saying that Esavai Bhagavan Shakshat Adyo Narayana Puman Mohayan Mayaya Lokam Gudascharati Vishnushu. Immediately he is identifying that see this person. Look at him. Who is he? He is Sakshat Narayana, Adyo Narayana. He is the origin of Narayana. He is not an ordinary person. Esavai Bhagavan Shakshat Adyo Narayana Puman. He is the origin of Narayana. No, he is just a cowherd boy. He was just roaming around here and there in Vrindavan. Somehow he became a strategist, and then, you know, people think that he is little clever. Little clever. That we should give it to him. A little clever. No. Mohayan Mayaya Lokam. Just to confuse everybody. Gudascharati Vishnishu. He is moving around among the Krishnis. Just to confuse everyone. Very clearly he identifies. Nirmatsaranam satam. So like that, if you see one by one, then Vidura, who is in illusion? Dhritarashtra is in illusion, and Vidura comes and he cuts that illusion with strong words. Why are you sitting like a dog? Eating from the hands of those who killed your children. Cuts that illusion. Mercilessly cuts that illusion. And then Yudhishthira is actually glorifying him. Bhavatvida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhurta Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swantasthena Gadabhrita. You carry the Lord in your heart. So you are there, you have gone for Tirtha Yatra, you have gone for holy places, not to get purified, but to purify the holy places. Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani says. So there comes Vidura, who actually cuts the illusion of Dhritarashtra. And then we meet none other than Arjuna. Arjuna, Parikshit is born. Of course, Parikshit has come, but we still don't see him as a personality. We simply see him that, okay, he is born, the Pandavas have celebrated his birth, and so many things are happening. That's what we see. We still don't see him as personality. He is the hero. Krishna is the hero. He is also another hero in Bhagavatam. Okay. So he comes in the climax of first canto. And then we see Arjuna. Arjuna is in illusion. What is his illusion? That I am great Arjuna. I went to Dwaraka. The Lord already left. I was coming back with the wives of the Lord. And I was defeated by some cowherd boys. I am that great Arjuna who could actually see the entire army of Kauravas with single hand. I can actually defeat them. I am that great personality. I have been defeated by some cowherd boys. And then Krishna cuts his illusion. How does Krishna cut his illusion? Krishna gives him the remembrance of Bhagavad Gita. And then Arjuna is saying, now I am remembering the words of my friend in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And the moment he remembered Bhagavad Gita, immediately he became pacified. All his misery, everything finished, he became pacified. He understood that now I should not worry about anything. I should simply focus on the Lord. So Arjuna learnt Bhagavad Gita in Bhagavatam. Because when everything is materially favorable, it is very difficult to learn philosophy. Even if someone teaches you philosophy, when everything is materially favorable, very difficult to learn philosophy. Only when the material world shows its ugly face, when Maya is in the mood to kick, is the right time to learn philosophy. So please remember, when Maya kicks, go to philosophy. It is the right time to learn philosophy. So there is Arjuna, whose illusion is personally removed by Krishna by giving the remembrance of his own instructions in Bhagavad Gita. And then we have Yudhishthira, who is fully equipoised. He is not disturbed. He understands that his time has come, so he simply walks away. Doesn't care for his brothers, doesn't care for his wife. Big battle was fought because of her. Doesn't care for her. Doesn't even see if she is coming or she doesn't coming. Simply he walks away and goes back home, back to Godhead. The Pandavas retire timely. And then we find the advent of the history of Parikshit, the great personality. From the beginning, he is simply absorbed in Krishna. From his birth, he is absorbed in Krishna. Nirmatsaranam satam. From his birth, he is absorbed in Krishna. And when he understands that Kali has come to his kingdom, he goes with a great army. And then what he is doing? Going with a great army, going all the places, what he is doing? What he is doing? He is simply listening to Krishna Katha. Parikshit is one real interesting character. When he is happy, he listens to Krishna Katha. When he was going to die, he listens to Krishna Katha. He is one real interesting character. He is very consistent in his taste for Krishna Katha. He goes everywhere. He goes with his big army everywhere. And what is happening? Everywhere he goes, he only hears the glorification of his ancestors and the dealings of his ancestors with Lord Krishna. So he goes with his army and everywhere he camps, and then he hears Krishna Katha. And even as a child, Balak Kridan Kai Kridan Krishna Kridam Ya Adate, it says how he was growing up. He was growing up listening to different stories of Krishna and enacting those stories, those pastimes. Yesterday we saw some nice drama, enaction of pastimes of Dhruva. So same way, this Parikshit Maharaj is as a child, he is seeing different enactions of pastimes of Krishna, sometimes doing this drama, sometimes doing that drama. Krishna Kridam Ya Adate. So as a child, when he is in the womb, he sees Krishna. As a child, he is actually doing, he is playing Krishna games, listening to his pastimes. He becomes king, he takes army, he goes everywhere, he listens to Krishna Katha. And then he meets Kali, Nirmat Saranam. It's very important to understand. And then before that, you get introduced with Dharma, another great personality. So the person who is inflicting pain is there. The person who can avoid punishment is there. And the person who is suffering that pain is there. It just requires one word of confirmation. So as a matter of duty, the king is asking Dharma, is this fellow Kali, is he the cause of your trouble? Say yes or no. The moment you say yes, I will finish this fellow. So you see, the person who is actually inflicting so much of pain is in front of him. The authority who can provide competent punishment, who has all the strength to provide the punishment, is in front of him. And he can also save him, he is in front of him. And he is asking the question, ready to punish, is asking the question that identify the perpetrator, that identify the culprit. And then what Dharma says? I cannot point fingers. It's very difficult to find out who is the cause of my suffering. Reality distinguished from illusion. Immediately Parikshit, he identifies, yes, you should be the personality of Dharma. Nobody else can answer question like this. You must be the personality of Dharma. And then Parikshit deals with Kali. When Parikshit deals with Kali, you can see the non-envious nature of Parikshit. That Parikshit could have killed Kali. He could have beheaded Kali. Okay, but he doesn't do it. Because he understands this is the will of the Lord, that Kali has to come. And he has to take over. He has to ruin the people. All these things has to happen. He understands it is the will of the Lord. So he does not interfere in the force of time. Even though he has the capacity to interfere, he does not interfere in the force of time. He does not try to put his mastery over the Lord. He does not impede the plan of the Lord. And he gets blamed for it. The sages criticize him. That why did he leave his kingdom? He's a competent king. He should not have left his kingdom. When he gets cursed, when he wants to leave the kingdom, the sages criticize him. All the different citizens, they are simply dependent on him. What is this irresponsible act? He is so selfish that he wants to just listen to Krishna Katha for his own benefit, and then he wants to simply go to Vaikuntha. What is happening to all the citizens? What is happening to Kali Yuga? He was the one who is controlling Kali Yuga. So if he goes away, who will control Kali Yuga? Heavy criticism. And that too from great sages, not from some ordinary people. But still, we can see that he is very equipoised. And when he himself does something wrong, and then there is some reaction for it, he is thinking, let there be some reaction for it. He does some very minor mistake, that too by the will of the Lord. He does something very minor, and then he is thinking, let there be reaction for it. And when he gets cursed, disproportionate punishment for a disproportionately small mistake. Disproportionately high punishment for a disproportionately small mistake. He is still non-envious. He does not counteract the curse. He does not blame the boy. He does not blame the sage. Does not blame anybody. Rather, he welcomes the curse. He says, the Supreme Lord has graciously overtaken me in the form of the curse of a Brahmana boy. Nirmat Saranam Satam. And then what he does? He decides to go and sit in the bank of Ganges and listen to Krishna Katha. He is one must guy in Bhagavatam. In all conditions of life, he is simply listening to Krishna Katha. He is really interesting character. Living, he listens Krishna Katha. Dying, he listens Krishna Katha. And in the process, he is doing all his duties also very nicely. Not that he is listening to Krishna Katha and not doing anything. He is ruling the kingdom, he is controlling Kali, he is going out to so many places, he is keeping everybody in check, but he is also listening to Krishna Katha. Krishna tells Arjuna that Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu Mam Anusmara Yudhyacha Mayyarpita Mano Buddhir Mam Yevaisha Samshayaha. You can actually see that shloka coming live if you actually study Parikshit's life. That whatever he is doing, he is always thinking of Krishna. He is never bereft of his Krishna consciousness. And the greatest of danger, he takes it very lightly. Tapatraya Unmulana. Because he has actually distinguished reality from illusion. And then comes the most important character of Bhagavatam. Who is that? Sukadeva Goswami. He is another character who has distinguished reality from illusion. So, the whole of first canto introduces us one character after other who actually showcase this concept of distinguishing reality from illusion. And by devotional service, how they have actually removed the tapatraya. And in between, we left one important character. Who is that? Kunti Maharani. And we don't have to talk about much about her. Everybody knows her prayer. What is that? Vipadaha santu taha saswat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yatsyat apunar bhavadarshanam. He is a very strange character. Even ISKCON devotees get afraid of her. They don't want to chant her prayers. So if you tell anybody, are you chanting Kunti Maharani prayer daily? They will say up and down. What is wrong with this guy? Why to chant Kunti Maharani prayer daily? So you see, there are people in Bhagavatam who get into trouble, but they are not affected by it. Okay, like Bhishma Dev, he gets into trouble, not affected by it. Like Narada, he gets into trouble, not affected by it. Like Parikshit, he gets into trouble, he is not affected by it. Like Arjuna gets into trouble. There are characters in Bhagavatam who gets into trouble, but they are not affected by it. Kunti Maharani is one character who wants to get into trouble. Okay, and it's not that she has not experienced trouble at all. She has experienced all sorts of trouble. Vishan, Mahagne, Purushada, Darshadat, Asat, Sabayaha, Vanavasa, Krishrataha, Mride, Mride, Aneka, Maharatastrato, Dronyastratas, Chasna, Hare, Abhirakshitaha. So she has seen everything. And still she is saying, let there be more trouble. Reality is distinguished from illusion. So the first canto actually teaches us that this is what creation is all about. That it is a facility given by the Lord so that we can actually utilize this facility to distinguish the reality from illusion and utilize whatever we have. Some of these characters in first canto are highly advantaged by their birth, by their knowledge, by their position, by their wealth, by their influence. They're highly advantaged. And some of these characters in first canto, they're highly disadvantaged. Like Narada in his previous life, highly disadvantaged. No good birth, no education, no shelter, no bodily strength, no influence, nothing. So, in first canto, you find a spectrum of people who are advantaged, who are disadvantaged, who are knowledgeable, who are not knowledgeable, like Vyasadeva, his embodiment of knowledge. And then you have Kunti Maharani, who is a woman, women are generally considered less intelligent. So, you get all spectrum in first canto. And all of them excel because bhakti is ahaituki apratihata. Materially one is advantaged or disadvantaged, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. One simply can execute bhakti. This is what first canto teaches us. Okay. So you can see every canto like this. Okay. If you see every canto like this, then you can actually understand the relationship between the title of the canto and the subject of the canto. Okay. I'll deal with second canto and we'll stop. Then when I come next time, I'll deal with third canto, fourth canto, fifth canto. Like this, whenever I come, I'll give some lecture on this topic. Okay. So, second canto is titled Visarga. Okay. The cosmic manifestation. So second canto deals with the cosmic manifestation, and the creator or the secondary creator of the cosmic manifestation is Brahma. Therefore, the main character in second canto is also Brahma. Either it is Brahma's dealings with Narada or it is Lord's dealing with Brahma. So in second canto, either Brahma is dealing with Narada or the Lord is dealing with Brahma. The essence of second canto is explained in Chaturshloki. It also explains the purpose of cosmic manifestation. So in the first canto, if the subject matter is reality distinguished from illusion, the second canto, the explanation is that why some people see it as illusion and why some people are able to perceive the reality. That is subject matter of second canto. Last. Yeah? What is the last thing? Why some people see this cosmic manifestation as illusion and how some people are able to make out that reality. That's the subject matter of second canto. And second canto describes also how to find that reality within this illusion. Because The principle is that the effect also contains the cause. That is the principle. If the cosmic manifestation is the effect and the Supreme Lord is the cause, like is explained, janmadyasyetaha, if the cosmic manifestation is the effect and the Supreme Lord is the cause, then an intelligent observer should be able to find the cause within the effect. And that is the subject matter of second canto. That how to find the cause within the effect. And the second canto progresses in that way. According to the advancement of one consciousness, one is given different opportunities to find the effect within the cause. Like in the beginning, one is given the opportunity to find the effect, the cause from the effect is by studying the universal form. So this is the basic level of consciousness. The basic level of consciousness, one is able to study the universal form and he is able to relate the different aspects of the universal form to the form of Krishna. So this way, he actually understands that the Supreme Absolute Truth has a form. Is not formless. He has a form. So he gets used to this idea that the Supreme Absolute Truth is a person. He has a form. He has a definite form. And he is able to relate what he is able to see day to day. He is able to relate that to that form. Okay. So then in the second canto, he learns he is not only the origin, but he is also the controller and the maintainer. In the second chapter, he learns that. Okay. This way, he is introduced to Paramatma. And in the third canto, he is introduced to devotional service. Okay. In the third chapter, he is introduced to devotional service. And that explanation of devotional service occupies from the 4th chapter to 10th chapter. The subject matter of devotional service is expanded from, it's expanded continuously from 4th chapter to 10th chapter. But in the 9th chapter, it is concisely explained within the Chatushloki Bhagavata. Ahameva samyevagre nanyat yat sadasat param paschadaham yayetakcha yovashishyeta sosmaham. So this is the first thing the Lord says, that I am the origin of everything and I will remain in the end. The first thing the Lord says. Okay. I am the origin of everything and I will remain in the end. So because I am the origin of everything, whatever you see, if you are not able to connect it with me, it is called Maya. If you are able to connect it with me, then this is reality. Pratetamya pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tadvidyat atmano maya eta bhasho eta tamaha. So what is illusion and what is reality? This pen is illusion and this pen is also reality. If you see this pen without connection to Krishna, this is illusion. If you see this pen as belonging to Krishna, then it is reality. As simple as that. It has some meaning. It is reality. So then, the third shloka explains the vision of that person who is completely saturated in reality, that in every aspect of this material world, he can simply see Krishna. He cannot see anything else. That his vision is so saturated with love of Krishna that he can only see Krishna. He cannot see anything else. And the fourth shloka, it explains those who don't have that vision, what they should look for. They should simply look for that vision in all times, in all places, in all circumstances. So this is what the cosmic manifest. This is why Brahma actually manifested the cosmic world. So you learn this from second can. We'll stop here. We'll see some questions, comments. Yeah. Yeah.
See,
the point is, I wrote it as illusory reality because there are two ways of understanding this illusion. Okay, there is Mayavada way of understanding this illusion and there is Krishna conscious way of understanding this illusion. The Mayavada way of understanding this illusion is that it doesn't exist. Jagat Mithya. Okay, it doesn't exist. This experience is false. Okay, that's what they say. So they say that Brahma Satya, Jagat Mithya. So this complete experience is false, it doesn't exist, it has no factual existence, it has no basis, that's what they say. Okay? But Vaishnava understanding of illusion is not that it doesn't exist. It exists, but it is temporary. So, as long as it exists, it is a temporary reality. So that's why I said that there is illusory reality. So, we don't completely deny the existence of the material world. Like for example, Mayavadis say that this building doesn't exist. Okay? So, they say it only exists because of your illusion. The moment you come out of the illusion, the building will not exist for you. Okay? That's what Mayavadis say. But we say that the building exists. And when I come out of illusion, I will use this building for Krishna's service. That's what I am doing now. Understand? So that's what devotees are doing, that they are simply using this facility for Krishna's service. So when they use this facility for Krishna's service, then this building becomes non-different from Vaikuntha. That's what we are studying today. Prabhupada is explaining in his purport, in Dhruva section, that the temples of Krishna consciousness, they are non-different from Vaikuntha.
So then the question of how Bhagavatam distinguishes illusion from Krishna, I mean illusion reality to Krishna conscious reality. So as it seems there is just a Krishna conscious reality. So then what is the meaning of distinguishing?
Because the illusory reality exists for those who are not in Krishna consciousness. It exists for them. It doesn't exist for them. See, ultimately what you are saying is correct. Okay, what exists is Krishna only. Okay, Krishna is existing with his multivarious energies. This is what is the existence all about. Okay, so that is what is explained. Parashya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shruyate Swabhaviki Gyanabala Kriyacha. So this is what exists. Okay, this is what we are supposed to see. That's what the vision of Mahabhagavata is all about. It's explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Stavara Jangama Deke, Deke Tara Murti. That simply he sees water moving or non-moving, he simply sees Krishna, he doesn't see anything else. Okay? Because for him, that's what is the reality. Okay? But there is a set of people who actually don't see it. So they are in the illusory reality. And there are a set of people who are transitioning from illusory reality to Krishna conscious reality. So they are caught between both. Sometime they understand that it is Krishna conscious reality, sometime they are overtaken by the illusory reality. You understand?
So technically, the sadhakas can perceive the transition from illusory to reality.
The sadhakas are in the period of transition.
Because those are already perfected, but then there is just one reality.
Yeah.
So they cannot perceive the illusion.
No, they it's not that they cannot perceive. They perceive what other people perceive. Okay? But they perceive that they are perceiving it wrong. They are the real seers. Ya pasyati sa pasyati, Krishna says. That one who sees like this, he actually sees. So he sees both. He sees what is the truth. And he also sees what is not the truth. Okay? That is the Madhyamadhikari. There is the Uttamadhikari who is in the level which you are saying. He cannot see anything else other than Krishna. So he cannot even see that people are not perceiving that this Krishna, some people are not perceiving. So he is thinking, who is not perceiving Krishna? I am the only one not perceiving Krishna. You understand? Everybody else is perceiving Krishna. So this is the level of Uttamadhikari. But a Madhyamadhikari is able to distinguish that those who actually perceive Krishna and those who don't perceive Krishna. The cloud is created by the sun. Yeah? But for an observer from the earth, the cloud covers the sun. Right? So, the cloud is the effect. Sun is the cause. Okay? So, sun is the cause. Sun has heat and light. The very effect it has produced, it has opposite effect, which is shade and darkness. Okay? And for a casual observer, it is even able to cover the cause. You understand? But is the sun covered by the cloud? Can the cloud go near the sun? No. When the cloud goes near the sun, if you move the cloud near the sun, what will happen? It will just evaporate. It cannot stand the heat of the sun. Okay? So the cloud cannot go near the sun. The cloud, it is not covering the sun. It's simply covering the observer who is able to see with a line of vision limited to the cloud. You understand? So, if an observer, he thinks, seeing the cloud, he thinks that there is no sun. Does that mean that the cloud is not produced by the sun? It's not like that. Right? It's very simple. In the cosmic phenomenon, you can see it. Okay? But if I am an intelligent observer, and if I am having a line of vision to see this person who is standing below the cloud, and if I am able to see the sun, if I am able to see the cloud, and if I am able to see myself also, then I can clearly understand that the cloud is caused by the sun. And for this guy who is so stupid, who thinks that because of the cloud there is no sun, I can understand that he is in illusion, but I have knowledge. So I can see both. I can see the cause within the effect. I can see, when I see the cloud, then I can simply remember the sun, because I know that the cloud is produced by the sun. You understand? The cloud contains the energy of the sun. The cloud is not the sun. Okay? The cloud contains the energy of the sun in the form of heat. That is the reason why it became cloud. Okay?
It is not yet manifested.
No, it is there. It's there in the right amount. Okay, that's why it is cloud. Okay? The heat of the sun actually makes the cloud. How does the cycle, water cycle, right? You studied water cycle in school, right? The sun is shining on the ocean, and the heat of the sun evaporates the ocean water. The ocean water rises to the sky because of the heat in convection, and then it condenses around the dust particles, and then it forms cloud. And then the cloud moves by air. So the energy of the sun is there in the cloud. Understand? So in that way, the sun is present in the cloud. Not that the sun is the cloud. You understand? It's not, sun is not the cloud. That's what Mayavadis say. Mayavadis say sun is cloud. But sun cannot be cloud, so there is no cloud. Okay? So cloud is not there. So that's how they think. They think exactly your line of thought. Okay? That sun is so bright, how can it be cloud? So there is no cloud. Forget it. Let us cancel the cloud. Okay? Let's only take the sun. They think like that. But the sun is also there, the cloud is also there. The unintelligent observer is also there, the intelligent observer is also there. Okay? So if you take all of them into account, then you will end up with Vaishnava philosophy. Is it clear?
Yeah, understood, but it seems that something is cannot be explained.
What is that it cannot be explained?
I mean, we are maintaining, Vaishnava philosophy is maintaining separate identity for observer, cause and effect.
Yeah.
And at the same time, keeping a safe distance between the cause and effect.
Yeah, it is already there, no? It's not that it is not there. These are realities. These are realities. Like, there is there is a separate identity for Krishna and there is a separate identity for Jiva. Okay, these are eternally separate identities. Mame Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. So these are eternally separate identities. They are not like, you know, identities which are a function of time, like the Mayavadis say. The identities are not a function of time. They are eternally separate identities. And Maya is eternally the energy of the Lord. Okay. Krishna says that Daivihi Yesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya. So it's eternally the energy of the Lord. Okay. So there are eternal distinguishing features of every aspect of the energy, and this distinction eternally exists. So that's why in that sense that analogy is applicable. In that sense, in that limited sense, it is applicable. Of course, you cannot explain everything, anything spiritual perfectly by anything material. Because you may say that after some time there will be no sun, there will be no cloud, there will be no observer. Then what happens? You understand? Okay, you may come to that argument. So that is a limitation of an analogy. You should be seen only to the extent it can explain you what is the philosophy. And that is a standard system. Everybody uses the same way of explaining analogy. Not that only we are using it. Even Mayavadis also do the same thing. Because if you want to explain something spiritual by material, there is an inherent limitation of how much you can extrapolate that analogy to what end. That limitation is inherently there. And that is there for everyone. Not only for us, there for everyone. The idea of giving analogies is that you will be able to figure out what you are able to see with what you are not able to see. That's the idea of analogy. You understand? Yeah. Yeah, the first question, it is true that different acharyas have named it differently, okay, and it's okay, this is not wrong, okay, it's not that this is right and this is wrong, okay, because every subject matter is there in every canto, okay, so it's not that it's only creation means only creation is there, okay. It's not like that. The other subject matters are also there in this canto. For example, Ishanukatha is there because all the incarnations of the Lord are explained in the first canto itself. Okay, so that is Ishanukatha. It is already there. Okay, same way there is some history is there. Okay, and same way there is some destruction is there. Then there is Krishna. Introduction of Krishna is already there. Love of Godhead is already there. So all these different topics are already there in every canto. It's not that it's exclusively there in only one canto, one topic only, other topic is not discussed. It is not like that. Okay. So different acharyas, they look at it in a different way. Like some acharyas, as you said, that they take first canto as introduction and then they start everything from second canto. There are other acharyas who have taken everything from third canto. So there are different acharyas who have named it different way. We should not consider it as a controversy or as something which is right and wrong. It's just that the acharyas have seen it in that way and we can accept it. And we can see, we can perfectly explain, like I was explaining creation. You can perfectly explain that why first canto should be called as creation. It's not very difficult to explain that. Like that every canto can be explained why it is called as that canto.
These things are applied on that also.
So that is one part. The second part of Bhagavatam is unique, like you said. That Bhagavatam connects all the 10 subject matters with one aim. What is that? It has only one aim, that you have to surrender to Krishna. Any subject matter Bhagavatam deals with, it will always bring you to that point. Like for example, fifth canto, Rishabhadeva says, Pritinna Yavad Mayi Vasudeve, that you have to develop Preeti for Vasudeva. Like every canto, you will be hammered with the same message. What is that? Love of Godhead is aim of life. Love of Godhead is aim of life. Love of Godhead is aim of life. So every canto is tied in such a way, the subject matters of every canto is tied in such a way that you will not make any mistake. You will simply come to the same conclusion by studying creation, by studying cosmic manifestation, by studying the different positions the Jiva can take, the Lord can take. By studying all the 10 subject matter, you will come to one conclusion. What is that? I should develop love of Godhead. That's the one conclusion it will come. Yeah. Have faith. That's the only way to develop taste. Have faith in the Acharya. Have faith in Prabhupada. There's no other technique. The only way to develop the taste for Srimad Bhagavatam is to have faith in Prabhupada. Yasya Deve Parabhaktir Yata Deve Tata Guru Tasyahi Katita Hartah Prakashante Mahatmanaha. So if you want Bhagavatam to deal with you, Bhagavatam is like a desire tree. It's not a book. Okay, it's like a desire tree, and it has personalities who are Vaishnavas, and they are residing, they are talking to you, they are dealing with you. You can develop relationship with them. Okay, they are speaking to you. Like when Suta Goswami is speaking, he is not only speaking to Savanakadi Rishis, he is also speaking to you. When Vasudeva is speaking, he is speaking to you. When Narada is speaking, he is speaking to you. So if you develop that personal relation with, if you want to develop that personal relation with Bhagavatam, then you should have faith in the Acharya, because the Acharya reveals the subject matter to you. So you have faith in Prabhupada. You have faith that Prabhupada, whatever he is writing in Bhagavatam is correct. You have that unflinching faith in Prabhupada, then Bhagavatam will open up to you. Then you can develop that relationship. Because Bhagavatam means Vaishnavas. Okay. And Bhagavatam is desire tree. You desire something, you pray to Bhagavatam that give me faith. Like Sanatana Goswami's prayers are there. Very beautiful prayers of Srimad Bhagavatam. He is praying to Bhagavatam. Sarva Sastabdi Piyusha Sarva Vedaika Satfala Sarva Siddhanta Ratnadya Sarva Lokaika Drikprada. Very, very beautiful set of prayers he actually prays to Bhagavatam. Okay? In that he actually surrenders to Bhagavatam. Madeka Bando Mat Sangin Madguru Man Mahadana Man Nishtaraka Mad Bhagya Madananda Namostute. Like that you surrender to Bhagavatam. Okay? So then you can have some relationship with Bhagavatam. Have faith in Prabhupada. This is the basic thing. If you have faith in Prabhupada, then you can develop taste for Srimad Bhagavatam. There is no other mechanical technique. You can't develop taste in Bhagavatam by intelligently analyzing Srimad Bhagavatam. You cannot do it. By intelligent analysis or by intellectual approach, one cannot develop taste for reading Srimad Bhagavatam. It will become dry. Have faith in Prabhupada. Automatically Prabhupada will give you a taste for Srimad Bhagavatam. And pray to Bhagavatam. This prayer, actually Sanatana Goswami's prayer, is a very beautiful prayer. If you want to have some taste for Bhagavatam, you can actually memorize that prayer, and every day you can recite to Bhagavatam. Which says, Asadhu sadhutvadayin ati nicho chatakara hanamuncha kadachinmam premna hitkantaroskura. It says that I am asadhu, you will make me sadhu. This is the nature of Bhagavatam. And don't leave my throat at any point of time. Very beautiful prayer, Sanatana Goswami's prayer. So you pray. Yeah.
In the last verse, Goswami
again mentions
the temple of
the service.
So is there any specific reason why
it is so? There's no specific reason, but the basic thing is Bhagavatam follows the traditional way of introducing a topic. Okay. It first introduces the topic with Mangalacharana, and then it also introduces the qualification to enter the topic, and then it introduces and it gives some blessings. So that's what the first three shlokas are there. And the entire first canto is an expansion of the first three shlokas, where the topic introduction is going on. Okay, they want Vasudeva wants to first of all properly introduce the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's what that uses first canto for that. That's why some acharyas call first canto as introduction, okay, or prelude to Srimad Bhagavatam. And then in second canto he gives the different subject matters. So it's not something unusual. And level of love of Godhead. It's not just jnana, it's vijnana.
But you said the purpose of understanding that it grows is rather than
knowing. That's a side effect. Okay. So is to get love of Godhead. That if you understand if you are able to distinguish the reality from illusion, then tapatraya unmolanam is a side effect. It's not the main purpose. It's a side effect. Okay, the Krishna conscious reality by definition means having love of Godhead. That is a Krishna conscious reality. What is Krishna conscious reality mean? That Krishna is supreme person and I am his servant and I have an eternal relationship with him. And that relationship is what matters. That is what is Krishna conscious reality. That is love of Godhead. What else is Krishna conscious reality? So when you are understanding Krishna conscious reality means that you are developing love of Godhead. And when you do that, then tapatraya unmolanam automatically happens. For that you have to understand the reality, the Krishna conscious reality. When you are in illusion, okay, then you are in illusory reality, okay, then the tapatraya is there. Okay, so if you want to come out of that, the way to come out of that is that you understand the Krishna conscious reality. When you understand that Krishna conscious reality and when you become non-envious of Krishna, then automatically everything becomes auspicious, and the existence of threefold material miseries actually is not, it becomes an impetus for Krishna consciousness. It doesn't become a impediment in Krishna consciousness. So in that way it is not experienced at all. The purpose of threefold miseries is to actually take you away from Krishna. Everything has a purpose. Like the purpose of the kurta is to cover this body. Okay. So if it doesn't cover the body, what is the use of wearing kurta? Okay, suppose I wear a kurta, okay, which only has only this and this, and then some little connection here and little connection here. It's big open here, it's big open at the back. So what is the use of wearing kurta? There's no use of wearing kurta. The purpose of wearing kurta is that I can cover the body. Same way the purpose of the threefold material miseries is that it can make you forget Krishna and it can make you suffer. The moment that same threefold material misery is going to give you happiness, unlimited bliss, and is going to take you towards Krishna, is finished, is gone. Even though it is existing, it is as good as not existing. That's what you see in first canto. That different people seemingly suffering, but they are actually in bliss. It's clear? Should we stop? Celebrity 520. Okay. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanande.